Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
But I think seeing the property my parents bought in 1987 for like $80,000 increase in value to be worth nearly like $500,000 in about 20 years got me understanding how property could be used to create wealth.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors, find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategy. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, I'm speaking with property investor Stephen Truong on his journey from Vietnamese refugee to successful financial markets lawyer. With almost 10 separate properties under his belt, Truong shares how local government work inspired him to pursue property investment and exposes the downsides of investing in property. Also, before we delve into this episode, go over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe to receive your free property investor case studies, where you'll learn how to generate passive income from your properties. Go there now to sign up for free. For almost two decades, Stephen Truong has balanced his full-time job as a lawyer with consistent success in the property investment field.
My day is quite structured. I get up in the morning, do a little bit of exercise and eat breakfast and head off to work. I'm at work most days from about 8 to 6pm. I've worked in many areas of law, but I'm currently a financial markets derivatives lawyer in the bank. When I get home, I would read property investment articles and listen to podcasts until I go to bed.
While Truong has bounced around several jobs as a lawyer, his 17 years of experience in property and banking have helped him secure an undoubtedly successful career in investment. He sees himself as more of a buy and hold type of investor.
There was many years of no growth during the GFC, but I've learned that if you know you can weather the property cycle and come out on the other side, it'll all be worth it. The boom in these markets have allowed me to draw on my equity over the past few years and use that money as a buffer or to purchase more properties. I think realizing that you need to go through these property cycles, whether it's one or two or three property cycles where there's going to be periods where it's going to be no growth at all, and try to weather that out. That's where it becomes worth it. Because, I mean, the property market in Tasmania and Hobart hadn't done anything for about 10 years. And so only in the past year or so, it's kind of boomed as well.
Coming from an impoverished background, Truong's family escaped Australia via fishing boat just after the Vietnam War. Despite struggling for jobs in Sydney, Truong's parents were able to use their savings to provide Truong and his sister a future in the city a few years later.
Well, I was born in Vietnam just after the Vietnam War ended. My father had been a soldier in the South Vietnamese Army. So after having been released from a re-education camp, he and my mother, who was a nurse at the time, took me and my sister, who was less than a year old at the time, on a fishing boat and escaped Vietnam. We landed in Malaysia as refugees, and luckily I was accepted into the greatest country on earth, Australia, in 1979. I was about three or four years old at the time, and we settled in Perth. After about 6 months in Perth, the family relocated to Sydney due to an inability for my parents to find any work. So back in those days, yeah, it was very little work centred around Perth. We moved to Sydney, and I grew up in Newtown in Sydney and attended the local primary school until about year five, when my parents managed to save for a house in the southwest of Sydney. They managed to save enough and bought their home near Mount Pritchard in Sydney's southwest in about 1987 for about, I think, $80,000 at the time.
Despite the debt that comes with buying property and their odd jobs, Chong's parents gave it their all.
They borrowed about $40,000 from the bank, and by the time my father retired in about the year 2000, he managed to finally pay off the loan. Apparently, the outstanding amount owing was still about $40,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it looks like the interest rates just, you know, he was really managing to pay off the interest. He worked at Australia Post for about 25 years and took a voluntary redundancy package and finally managed to clear about $40,000 debt at his retirement. So he managed to pay that off at his retirement. Quite amazing, he thought, because after about 25 years with a mortgage, he still owed $40,000, which what he borrowed from the bank. So my mother, for about all her time in Australia, has been or had worked as a dressmaker. So she was sewing, working in sweatshops, sewing, garments in the Asian areas of suburbs of Sydney. So for that whole time, even though she was a trained nurse back in Vietnam, the only real job that she could get was as a dressmaker.
He attended a high school in southwest Sydney before becoming a student at Sydney University.
Then I attended the local high school in the southwest of Sydney and managed to get into a combined law and economics degree at Sydney University in 1995. And finished that in the year 2000.
Since then, Trong has been working in law for the last 17 years.
Prior to starting investing in property, I worked as a paralegal in several law firms whilst I was at uni, and I graduated in 2000. I worked as a planning and local government lawyer for a law firm in the CBD for a few years. I think that's where I got into understanding property and how the planning regimes and local government have an impact on the property industry. I was involved with a lot of cases in the Land and Environment Court when I was working at the firm, and as we had several local councils as our clients.
Oh.
I mean, although it was interesting work, I needed to expand my knowledge and ended up at a US investment bank, JP Morgan, in its derivatives business, worked for a few other different investment banks, Australian and international, over those years, and now I'm currently a lawyer at one of the major Australian banks.
He also claims that his parents' hard-earned property and his university studies both influenced him to start investing in property himself.
I think my interest in property probably started in university when property law was one of my favourite subjects. Then when I obviously started as a local government and planning lawyer, it just increased because I saw how the law operated in practice. It was hard for my parents to invest in anything, as it was hard enough for them to keep food on the table and clothes on their backs coming to a new country with no English skills. But I think seeing the property my parents bought in 1987 for like $80,000 increase in value to be worth nearly like $500,000 in about 20 years got me understanding how property could be used to create wealth. The great thing was my parents never asked me to stop with my purchases. I think they knew it was best to invest in something rather than do nothing at all.
Trong's journey with property investment started in Western Sydney. However, he quickly focused his money on property in Tasmania, choosing to play the waiting game.
The first property my wife and I bought was our principal place of residence at the time. It was a unit in Western Sydney, which we bought for about $250,000 in, I think, early 2000. We took advantage of the $15,000 first homeowner's grant at the time to purchase that new unit. We ended up selling that around 2007 for about the same price. So it didn't seem like it moved much between the early 2007. Our first investment property was actually a property we bought in a small city or small town in Tasmania called Burnie. We bought that for about, I think, $100,000 at the time and sold it a few years later for about $130,000. That type of property was the only property we could afford at the time. We went on holidays to Tasmania one year and loved it so much, decided to buy property there.
Coming up after the break, we'll delve deep into Trong's journey from his first property to his 12th.
Mainly because I've only sold two investment properties that I own, and I bought about 12 in total over the years. I currently have about 7 in Hobart and 3 in Sydney. So I started buying the investment properties in Hobart around 2005.
How he started on the right foot?
Did spend some time, but it wasn't to the point where, you know, we read over and over about properties and the economy in the States. It was just more, this looks affordable, looks like a nice area.
His experiences with runaway tenants?
There was one incident where the tenants skipped out on the lease and left without notification.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Hey, podcast listeners. If you're finding this podcast super informative, then guess what? I'm giving you an exclusive free case study from property investors like this one, just for listening. These case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific strategies and numbers of their portfolio. Simply text me your email address to 0499881040 to get your free case studies. Now back to the show. Despite his early success, he had gone into the investment industry with next to no prior experience, having worked things with some basic knowledge on positive gearing and finding a good property manager.
Did spend some time, but it wasn't to the point where, you know, we read over and over about properties and the economy in the States. It was just more, this looks affordable. Looks like a nice area. How much rent can we get from this property? Okay, fine. And what's the interest rate? And yeah, basically went ahead with it. Overdose of research.
Yep. And that was your first experience of actually buying investment property, especially you bought it interstate as well too. Well, how did you feel about that first one interstate?
I guess we didn't have any issues or concerns because we did the numbers, and the numbers seemed to work. This was the interest rate at the time, this is the amount that amount of rent you can get, and this is the price. So I think it ended up being positively geared, it's not an area that had huge amount of capital growth, but it was affordable for us, and we were able to manage we found a good property manager down there, and we thought it was manageable, so because it was positively geared.
At one point, Trong owned 12 properties, however selling 2 simply because of the overexposure in Hobart.
Okay, so currently I have about, I think, 9 right now in my portfolio. I describe myself as a buy and hold type of investor, mainly because I've only sold 2 investment properties that I own, and I bought about 12 in total over the years. I currently have about 7 in Hobart and 3 in Sydney. So I started buying the investment properties in Hobart around 2005. That was the Burnie property in Hobart. We held that for about 2 years, and we managed to sell it for 30% or so gain, even though it was only a small amount. We then started buying in Hobart after that, in suburbs like Old Beach, Howrah, Austin City. And we've only ever sold one more investment property over the years. And that was more because to try to, I think I was overexposed in Hobart. So we decided to get rid of one of our properties.
In the recent years, he has also bought properties in Sydney, however, claiming that his properties in Hobart are easier to maintain.
We got 1 unit in Sydney and 2 homes in Sydney, in the inner west. So that's done well with the capital growth, obviously over the past few years. But Hobart's done well due to the fact that it was positively geared for a long time. And so during those stages of my life, it was easy to maintain. Didn't have to worry too much about not being able to make repayments.
Property investment isn't all fun and games though, with Trom himself experiencing problems with some of his tenants. Due to such experiences, he encourages property investors to buy landlord's insurance for compensation in the case of unforeseen events.
I mean, I think the worst moments I've had in property investment have been tenants damaging the properties. I've always bought investment properties in secure areas, suburbs with little or no housing commission homes. So I haven't had major issues, but I've had to replace carpets and to fix holes in walls due to tenants skipping out suddenly. But I think the main lesson I've learned was to always have landlord's insurance. I guess because of landlord's insurance, I've managed to always obtain compensation for tenant issues such as damage and loss of rent. The insurance companies have always paid out on those claims, and if you've got a good property manager and landlord's insurance, you don't have to worry too much if certain things are damaged. But I guess it's always good to make sure that you try to get the right tenants in the first place.
With one particular tenant, Trong was left with an unsalvageable carpet and holes in his property. To this day, he has no clue what happened to those tenants.
I've had probably a few properties down in Hobart where you've got a few tenants who occasionally, and it may not be, their, I guess, natural tendency to be the way that they had been, but because of certain stages in their life and certain financial issues they've had in their lives, so they've stopped paying rent, or they've had children running around damaging carpets, and there was one incident where the tenants skipped out on the lease and left without notification. The property manager came and had a look at the property, and it looked like the whole lounge room carpet had been damaged by fire or so forth, and certain parts of the house had holes in it. And these tenants had been quite good tenants for many years with us. And then for one reason or another, whether it be by domestic issues or because of certain things that happened in their lives or financial problems, they've changed character.
Wow, that's a fascinating story, because that is very strange, because, they've been good tenants and then suddenly they skip or damage the property. There definitely must be something that happened in there. You didn't end up getting to the bottom of this, I assume. You just went straight through getting landlord's insurance. Is that right?
Yeah, we never found out where they went or what happened to them. And a lot of the time it could be due to marriage breakup, or, we just went ahead with the claim, and obviously we managed to get compensated for that. But it's also the hassle of having to deal with those issues is a big thing. But at least if you're compensated by the insurance company for it, it makes it a bit easier.
With all his experience as a property investor and his proven track record, he's able to determine his profits as property cycles continue their course.
So it took quite a long time for the Hobart ones to go, but I bought them for quite cheap back in the mid-2000s. And in the past, 10 or 11 years, they've all doubled. And funnily enough, the Sydney properties, which I only bought about 5 years ago, they've all doubled as well. So it's obviously the Sydney market boomed at a different time and to a greater extent, I guess. But they've all increased by about at least 80% to 100%.
The best tip he could give future and current property investors is to always wait it out. he believes that property investment is a long-term commitment. It might not be the most exciting strategy, but it certainly is rewarding.
And I mean, with the Hobart properties, some people would have probably said, oh, no, nothing's going to happen. Let's just sell out. And I think I knew some people that invested in that market and did decide to sell out. But I thought, just stick it through. It's a long-term thing. It's not, you're in it for the long term. So stick it through.
So, inspired by Stephen Truong's story, we'll continue the conversation in a future episode on Property Investory, where we discuss his mindset and strategies.
I think the only thing that really held me back was trying to find funding, or was actually finding the funds for it.
The best resources that have led him to success?
I mean, funnily enough, I've recently started to get into property podcasts, actually podcasts in general.
How he was able to make smart use of his money when buying property?
I think it was a consistent purchase of, on average, about one property every year.
And that's next time in a future episode of Property Investory. Also, if you haven't subscribed to receive your free property case studies that I only send out exclusively via email, then head over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe. These real case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific numbers of their portfolio, the strategies, and much more. Simply visit propertyinvestory.com to receive your free case studies. Thanks for listening.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.